Well, you made it again to another episode of UAP Studies Podcast. We've been having a plethora of great guests as of late. I've been blown away with the guests actually that have been on the podcast lately, Michael. And today is no exception to the rule. Absolutely. Now, we should say for those who are viewing the podcast right now, Michael is sporting a very fantastic pair of sunglasses.
Really cool pair of sunglasses. I got them at C Eyewear in Charleston. There's only 100 of every brand, of every model that they make. But I'm wearing these, and they're really dark orange tinted. I'm wearing them not because I'm cool, though I am. I'm wearing them because I, like many people in America, suffer from migraines. And I'm currently enduring the aura, the precursor to my migraine. And if you are a migraine sufferer, we'd like to talk to you about one of our sponsors to the show today, which is Maxalt, the migraine medicine. Not really, actually. Sponsors. But I do. I'm having a headache. These are going to block it out. And as a consequence, I look cool. But if you're just listening in audio, just imagine me looking cool, and you pretty much got the picture.
We'd like to mention our sponsors, the Mexican Cartel, for doing this podcast. Awesome.
We can get cartel sponsors.
They got endless money.
Oh, yeah. You know what? And I said about the UFO program. You know what they're saying? Like, Congress is looking into it, and they're missing billions of dollars every year that's not accounted for. If that was the cartel, that you were missing $1 billion of their money, what would happen to you and your family, right?
Yeah. You'd go missing too.
Oh, we should get the cartel to be in charge of UAP, disinformation. Yeah. Not disinformation.
Cartel
accountants
have really stressful lives, I imagine.
Well, $1,500 for a hammer makes no sense. What's it made of? Golden? Yeah, it's made of gold. Like, it's crusted with diamonds. We need it. Today, we're going to talk about something that is very cool and is becoming a lot more prevalent in ufology. And ufology, when we say ufology, I gentlemen, you guys would both, or all four of you would agree that, I'm including myself in this, that UAP is not really the right word because it talks about aerial phenomenon, or really this phenomenon's in the water, it's in the skies, it's in space. And some people even see it go through solid objects, which again, defies everything that we know about what we all agree is reality. And today is no exception to the rule. We are going to talk about a brand new documentary movie that's coming out called Transmedium, Fast Movers and USO 5.1. It was directed and made by Darcy Weir. So Darcy, welcome to the podcast, my man.
And welcome. What's up?
Yeah. And we also have Andy as well. Andy, I want to make sure I have your right last name. Is it hard C or soft C in the middle?
I'm not sure what either one of those are.
Marciel?
It's Marciel.
Marciel. Gotcha. Marciel. Yeah, Andy joins us as well. Michael and Andy are joining us from the U.S. Darcy's actually a fellow British Columbian. He's actually just down the highway from me a little bit. We got some Canadian Vancouverites representing today as well. Darcy, I thank you for making this movie. I know that you worked with Richard Dolan on this as well. Richard is coming out with a book covering these USOs. One of the things that blew me away about watching this documentary, and your documentaries always fascinate me. I used to watch your documentaries even before I started the podcast. And you always get these clips or pieces of information that I'm like, gosh, I never knew that before. And you do that every single time. And again, with this movie, there's so many cases throughout history of the military encountering these things in the middle of the ocean. And to me, it baffles me that, they're going 800 knots underneath the water. Submarine can't go more than 40, 50 knots, you mentioned in your documentary. So how is that possible? That thing should be torn apart by just...
What is 100 knots? How fast is 100 knots?
I think it's about 170 miles per hour in American speeds. But when you think about submarine men and Navy men from different types of ships that are going across the seas, if they detect on sonar these objects that are moving at, way faster than 50 knots per nautical mile, they're moving sometimes at 300, 600 miles per hour, basically underwater.
So that's between like a race car and a jet.
oh, it's faster than a race car or a jet, you know, it's incredible. And the only thing that we have that can say circumvent the friction caused by ocean drag when you're moving through it in a submarine or, you know, a torpedo, for example, we highlight in the documentary, I think it's the MK8480s or something, or a type of torpedo we produce, the American Navy, that is. And then the Russians also have their own type of submarine torpedo that creates an effect called supercavitation. Mm-hmm. And supercavitation is where essentially they've built this device at the front of the torpedo that releases a high jet pressure of air that, or steam really, that cuts through the ocean and creates an envelope that surrounds the torpedo so that it can move a little bit faster. But I mean, a little bit faster is like 70 miles per hour. We're not talking about objects that can move at 300 or 600 miles per hour in the ocean. So essentially what we're talking about when Navy men are discovering these objects are USOs, unidentified submerged objects. And apparently the Navy has had a program called the Fast Mover Program for some time where they catalog objects like this moving in the ocean.
And so this is actually kind of comparable to what fighter pilots and people who are looking at aerial phenomena sometimes encounter. They encounter something that's moving so fast, it should melt in midair because of the friction between the air and the object itself, and it shouldn't be able to, or it should have, you know, lots of sonic booms, you know, but it doesn't. So in some way, that's like a violation of the laws of physics as we understand them. And you're saying that we see a very similar phenomenon underwater. Things just shouldn't be able to move this fast without creating all sorts of strange, you know, other signs that we should be able to pick up friction, superheating water and things like that. But they just kind of glide through, no problem. And I think we actually have some footage that was released by Chris Mellon. I think it's public knowledge that Chris Mellon released this footage of transmedium, these phenomena that go between the air and underwater and then right back out without seeming deceleration or splash or anything. So maybe is the idea that these fast mover objects underwater are actually the same things that are in the atmosphere?
Yeah, I think well, the term transmedium is relatively new. So that came up post 2019. And The Debrief did an article on the fact that some documentation and some investigation into unidentified aerial phenomenon were exhibiting transmedium capabilities, meaning the ability to move through our atmosphere and through the ocean unimpeded by physics and, you know, friction, and which we would tend to see with our own craft that we know of, that's public knowledge. And so they did a Freedom of Information Act request, and they got hold of some emails that were going back and forth between Navy high-ranking military officials that were talking about UAPs and transmedium capabilities, and, you know, kind of discussing where they should go to continue investigating this. And I think it was David Grush that was part of the UAP task force that was actually circulating these reports, apparently in this, because it was an intelligence officer that was circulating and that created this rumor mill of transmedium objects at the time. I think, well, what was alleged to be part of those reports were pictures of an object that was caught by a F-18 fighter jet that was in scrambled to intercept it because they had detected it in the ocean. And it was a large black triangular object with blunted rounded edges that came out of the ocean, rose past the fighter jet, and then went off into the sky. And, you know, he saw the upper part of it, the side of it and also saw the under part of it. And when he saw the under part of it, he apparently saw three what looked like equally distant white lights at each corner, which, you know, this is one of these typical black triangular objects that have been reported for decades now. Are they ours? Are they, you know, theirs, some non-human intelligence? I don't know. But it's pretty incredible that even, you know, as of 2019, we're still seeing these things come out of the ocean. And it's we're getting more and more educated on the phenomenon, and all this terminology is coming up now that's further describing what the phenomenon is capable of. That's why I named the documentary Transmedium, to sort of help educate the masses on the fact that this is something new. This is something not new, like people have observed this for decades. There was an individual named Carl Feint that wrote about underwater objects, you know, USOs from ages ago. And there's many other credible UFO researchers that have been looking into this phenomenon. But the fact that this terminology came out of the DOD, essentially, that's what's interesting. And, you know, UFOs are now UAPs, and it's just going more and more mainstream. So that's why, you know, I put together the documentary to just highlight information like that and really just get people steeped in the information that's out there about this phenomenon.
Nice. Andy, actually, I was going to throw this back to you. And just a side note, by the way, we have a lot of black triangles in the Fraser Valley where we live in our area. Tons of them, tons of reports. By the looks of it, they are associated with the Grays. Most abductions are taking place from these black triangles, always involve Grays. Whether it was Terry Lovelace, there's one here in Langley, a lady was black triangle, Grays again. Grays are mantids, but they're never associated to tall whites or anything like that. They're always Grays. So I don't know what they're up to, but they're everywhere. Andy, you've been investigating this for a long time. What are your thoughts on the fact that we have these objects that are massive in size, that aren't only in the ocean, they're in our air and then in space, and we have different departments to handle the different mediums, which to me is silly. I mean, it should all be compiled in one big organization, but they're like, no, that's the Navy's problem. And if it's in the air, it becomes the Air Force's problem. If it's in space, it's now Space Force's problem or NASA's problem. So what are your thoughts on that? Like, how could we reconcile all these three different departments? And how do we go about this?
See, that would mean restructuring our military and how we do everything, because it's so compartmentalized the way they do things that I don't think we'll ever get to a point where they all work together as one. Like, everyone just has their own agendas and they have their own motives, and it's just, it makes it impossible to ever get to that point, honestly. Like, and it's frustrating too, because I mean, even Bob Lazar had said it when he spoke about it, where he couldn't even talk to, you know, the guy next to him about what they were doing because they weren't allowed. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, how can you possibly progress forward if this is how you, you know, keep this subject? Like, it's just never going to get anywhere. It won't get to where we would like to get because of that. You understand? And unfortunately, I don't see that ever changing.
And do you think the Air Force knows more than the Navy? Or do you think Space Force and NASA knows more than the Air Force? Like, what would you say the Russian doll is stacked right now?
Me personally, I think the ones that know are the wealthy families that fund a lot of these organizations, like, you know, government and military. I think they're the ones that have the real information, and they're the ones that are holding the real keys to all of this. And that's just me after, you know, researching and reading up on this subject. It's like, I mean, for example, you know, if they have this technology that we would need fossil fuels, why wouldn't they release it? Because there are certain people out there who just won't benefit anymore from it. You understand?
Yeah.
And if they're the ones that are holding the keys, they're not going to.
Which families?
I like Rothschilds and Rockefellers and, you know, individuals like that. Even the Royals. I'm pretty sure all of these high level families are in on it in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
So like in their own way. I use this term only descriptively, not like in a pejorative sense, but then you're a conspiratorialist, right? You think there's a conspiracy to keep this information in the hands of a select few.
I don't like to consider myself that. I'm only basing this off of what I've read and how I piece things together. That's the picture that I get. I don't like to consider myself that, because then you get all the craziness associated with it. So I don't want it
baggage,
to be
right? Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I don't want it to be that, you know, it's a conspiracy. No. From looking at how things have gone and played out and how everything's unfolded, you know, that's the conclusion that I've come to when it comes to this. Because when you look at, for example, like MJ12, it was only 12 individuals that actually knew anything. And that was how long ago?
If so MJ12 existed, yeah. I think there's really good reasons to suspect that maybe it didn't. That it was
even if it wasn't MJ12 exactly the name, there is a group out there that exists existed at one point that did hold all this information. So if that group existed before, then it's got to be passed down to somebody else now. You know what I mean? To continue that. So that's just me, in my opinion. I think a lot of people are looking in the wrong areas when it comes to where the actual information and the knowledge is. But that's just me.
Where should we look?
Sorry. That's what I'm saying, to them, you know, into these individuals. But it's so hard to kind of
the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and
I don't know all the names exactly. I don't have them on me to memorize them all like that. But if you look into it, you start to understand where I'm coming from when it comes to this and this subject.
And you're right. There is going to be a great divide amongst the haves and the have-nots. The people that can afford this new technology or afford to enjoy it or to use it for their benefit, whatever it is. I'm a little worried more about the way the world is going right now, with everybody wanting to dominate everybody. And the thing is, if you throw in some extraterrestrial verse engineering technology to force your will upon others, then you're technically, that's the highest form of treason that you could possibly get against your own species, is to use non-human intelligence technology against your own people for your own advantage, right?
I'm sorry to cut you off, but you got to also, and I tell this to people all the time, you got to remember something. These individuals, these people in those positions, these families that have this kind of money, that hold this kind of power, they don't look at themselves the same as us.
Yeah.
You understand? Like, we are
higher up.
They are a completely different species in their eyes to the rest of the world. So to them, thinking and viewing things in that manner is not a big deal. They're looking at it like it's possibly like their, how do you say, their answer to the issues of the future of humanity.
Yeah.
To separate themselves from them or from us, because, you know, we're not at the level that they're at. So we're viewed as less than they. You understand? So, for example, if this technology came out, you think that the regular Joe Schmo is going to be able to just go down to Honda and buy a Honda-made UFO?
Suzuki?
Heck no. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just not going to happen. The amount of responsibility that it would take to even have one of these in your possession, just a regular, let's just say a regular UFO like Bob Lazar's disc, the technology or the power, everything that goes into just that one craft alone, think about the amount of responsibility someone would have to have in order to be entrusted with that kind of technology and that kind of vehicle. So it's not something that the planet is going to benefit from the way they think. They'll benefit from it in a way where, you know, we can trust. I'll just put it this way. You can trust an idiot with some kind of technology, but you're not going to give them the freaking keys to the nuclear silo because you know what's going to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Speaking to that nuclear silo example, I mean, we kind of do discuss this in the documentary to some extent. I talked to Jim Goodall, who's like an OG in the UFO community. And
that was a cool scene, Darcy, with the lightning in the back. That was so badass. I was like, man, what did the Aussie capture to that? That was really cool.
Yeah. It was just like another form of beauty that was happening while I was investigating all this. But so Jim is telling me about nuclear warheads, thermonuclear warheads, and how, you know, many of the submarines that the United States Navy employs have nuclear reactors that can run them forever for a long time. And then they also have warheads that have, like, you know, 14 nuclear bombs in each type thing, you know? So pretty powerful weapons of mass destruction. And I questioned, you know, like, what do you think if one of these detonated at the bottom of the ocean, we could just like completely destroy our oceans? You know, the oceans are fragile too. You know, you've got ocean currents and all these jet streams and stuff. And would the pollutant of nuclear radiation possibly carry throughout the oceans and you know, hurt our livestock and hurt our water? And if that gets into the air, blah, 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 right? So I just kind of questioned that. And he kind of in a roundabout way was saying that, like, nuclear bombs are really dangerous, but that there's so much labor, intensive labor, that goes into harnessing this power. So they have, like, engineers and nuclear physicists that are, like, and electronics, you know, guys that are constantly looking at these nuclear warheads and monitoring them and making sure the electronics aren't wearing out, because the radiation actually, like, degrades the electronics over time and all that stuff. So they're like, you know, it's almost like this high maintenance wine collection. They're not just rotating these wine bottles, they're friggin' like servicing them year round to make sure that they don't degrade, blow up, whatever, right?
And yeah, a huge portion of America's nuclear warheads are currently being updated with, like, new plutonium cores and stuff. Actually, down at Savannah, Riverside, just a, you know, a few hours drive from my place, they're making a bunch of plutonium cores for them. So they do have to be constantly, like, maintained and updated, or they might still be functional, but they could
kill more people. Yeah that's what it does.
Well, what I was trying to get to in like sort of Andy's analogy, it's like, there's so much responsibility that goes into maintaining and operating that nuclear arsenal. Imagine you had something like the fabled sports model that Bob Lazar was busy testing out and checking the propulsion system for. If it really did operate on this nuclear element 115, and that was a pretty unstable, element, as far as we know in our current science, it's super unstable. That would be an extremely valuable thing to own, to operate, and to manage. And so I think that's also why you wouldn't have that rolled out en masse, because it ends up being, unfortunately with us like space monkeys, it ends up being eventually possibly used as a weapon. And also, if the actual nuclear power that operates that is so scarce, it's super valuable. You know, it's worth a ton of money, because who the heck is making this stuff on our planet, right?
So the idea that maybe making enough 115 would be too labor intensive to actually make it feasible. So, I mean, if we're taking the sort of Bob Lazar example, and I'll say that I'm the resident, like, Bob Lazar skeptic, but if that were our example, there's, like, all sorts of economic constraints on, like, making it work, even if we did have the technology. And even if you had one that you reverse engineered, you might not be able to, like, scale the production in a way that really mattered.
Or mass produce it too, Michael, right? Like, you got to think about how much anything to reverse engineer must cost, right? So, you could build maybe a new model of our version of their craft. but the cost of just maintaining. Now, one thing that really fascinates me about this is that even the sports model, you got the little dome that sits on top of the little reactor thing, but there's no bleed. There's no, like, it could stand beside you. You could touch it. You're never going to get sick. But for us, our technology, like, you'll get radiation poisoning, like, you'll die of cancer within a week. Like, it's crazy. So that's the part that, you know, if we had the technology, it is a crime against humanity to say, no, no, we're going to continue making money off of fossil fuels and selling guns. Right now it's World War III. And the only people that profit from wars is the governments and people who own the bullet factories, right? That's it.
I'm not even convinced governments profit economically from wars. I mean, very rare cases.
George Bush sure did with his bullet company. He sure made a killing out of it.
Oh, that's not the government, though. I mean, there are private corporations.
Yeah, but they get insight on it.
The actual economic cost of a war, it is just, I mean, the number of taxpayers you lose just by having them killed is enormous. War is just almost never
more. It is, but the problem is,
I'm on your side. I don't even see the benefits of the governments.
Yeah, but with this technology that could make the world better, and we don't have that. They're like, no, you guys don't deserve that. We're us.
And it's not even hard to imagine how they might such a technology might be weaponized. Like, people don't think often enough about the UIP that we have, like, video recordings of, that can apparently maneuver at extremely high speeds and make super quick right angle turns and things. Just as a projectile, you could crash that thing into a nuclear power plant and create a meltdown. And if there was a full scale meltdown, we've never had a full scale meltdown. I mean, we think Chernobyl was a very close miss. We miraculously saved ourselves from a full meltdown, because if Chernobyl had continued to burn its way down through the earth and into the water supply, it would have poisoned the entire water supply for over 100 million people, and everybody in Europe could have died. It could have been a catastrophe for all of humanity. But you could take one of these objects, even if you didn't reverse engineer it, and just slam it to the right nuclear power plant, and there'd be nothing anybody could do. So that might be a reason also why people would say, like, do not make this thing, because then it puts, like, putting a nuke in the hands of every civilian.
Pretty much. But also look at the state of the world, bro. We just can't be entrusted with any kind of technology like that. So I've gotten to the point where at first I used to get pissed off at the secrecy, but as I went through the experiences that I went through when I released my footage and saw the toxicity and deal with all the freaking crazy people and all the wild theories and all the violent individuals, I am now kind of on the side of, yeah, this might have to stay secret a little longer, because we're not mentally capable not just understanding it, but, like I said, being responsible with it and using it properly for the right reasons. Like, right now, every single person on this planet is living for themselves. You know what I mean? Like, everybody is greedy. I'm not, you know, I don't want to say every single person.
I don't think that's true. But the majority is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You live your life for yourself. Everyone lives their lives for themselves.
Do you live your life for yourself?
I have to live my life for myself. Who's going to take care of me? Who's going to pay for my bills? Who's going to buy my food?
Well, in that you're not fundamentally a selfish person, right?
No, but what I'm trying to say is that when I put it in those terms, is when you look at the majority of human beings, this is something that's been with us since, I mean, all of history. It hasn't changed. The only thing that has changed is our technology. That's it. Other than that, our root nature is still the same. You understand? We're repeating history with different times.
I disagree. And here's why. Because, you know, like, I was listening to an interview with a guy who wrote a book on psychopaths, right? And he goes around to all these CEOs of enormous countries, and they're all fucking psychopaths. They have no conscience. They have no concept of, like, caring about other people. And he goes to one of these guys' houses, and the guy has, like, enormous sculptures of eagles and, like, jaguars and shit. And the dude's like, why do you have all these sculptures? And the dude's like, well, because they're predators, and predators are these fundamentally selfish creatures that look out for themselves, and that's, like, what I want to be like. But that dude is not normal. And in fact, humans aren't predators. We didn't dominate the world by being selfish. We dominated the world by cooperating, right? It's not a bunch of jaguars that are, like, ruling the earth. It's a bunch of humans who like sympathize with each other and empathize with each other in ways that these like fundamentally selfish creatures can't. And so I don't think that, I think it's too far, it's too pessimistic to say that like humanity itself is so fundamentally existentially fucked that we can never like get around to trusting ourselves. I think the social conditions that we're in, like the sort of capitalist, you have to work and pay your own bills or you're gonna fucking die and nobody's gonna take care of you, that might be what drives us into like selfishness. But I think any argument that's premised on the idea that like we're fundamentally not trustworthy just isn't, this doesn't line up with like who I know we are. I don't think you're that.
You just nailed it though with what you said. Our system is what makes us this way, and that system's not going anywhere anytime
right
soon.
Right on. I agree. Totally agree.
So as I long say, as that system is around, we're fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would like, say like, yeah, I mean, I agree with both of you. I think like people by majority are good, empathetic towards each other. You know, not as many people are psychopaths or sociopaths. But, you know, there's been studies that prove, you know, I think some high percentage of CEOs and really wealthy business moguls out there are psychopaths. Are psychopaths, right? Hey, we don't want to get censored here.
Don't want to get censored.
Don't
that's
be,
true.
Don't be coughing Trudeau's
around. We're
going
into the gulag.
But yeah, so I'll see you there. But essentially, it's like you start to think, well, maybe the most successful people that can control information, that can control the masses, and you know, have the most power, are sociopaths or psychopaths. And it kind of comes back to what Andy's saying, like, maybe this sort of pseudo plutocracy that we live in, where corporations and monarchs still are kind of secretly running the planet, that is like this sort of psychopathic group that thinks the plebs, the peasants, shouldn't hold the same knowledge level as they do, because what knowledge essentially translates to long term is power. Knowledge is power. Therefore, don't give everybody the same amount of power, right? Sure. But you know, the UAP subject is fascinating to me because it is kind of like, if you look at it, if you pull out at like a bird's eye view, even Mick West could do this, you see elements of environmentalism, which is an empathetic thing. You see elements of anti-war and anti-fascism, people that are concerned about the world devolving into that, you know, and anti-corporatism or anti-plutocracy. So it's
anti-technology as well as another one.
Well, yeah, some people fear the technology, I guess, but I think more people in ufology would embrace this high level technology because they want us to, you know, clean up the planet and stop using things like fossil fuels and stuff, right? And I don't know. And like, even that technology could aid us in fanning out and populating other planets within our solar system or beyond, possibly, right? So I don't know. It's just like, you see this stuff, and like with Andy's position, which I've gotten to know him, I can say very confidently he is a friend. There's other people that I've said in the past that I thought were friends of mine that I've collaborated with, and I fully understand that was a foolish thing to say at this point. But, you know, Andy is a friend, and I've heard his story, and you probably saw it in the documentary near the end. You know, this guy did something that was altruistic. He thought, okay, somebody has come to me from the Customs Border and Patrol agency that wanted me to see these videos that could possibly be authentic UAP videos, right? And so he thought to himself, how am I going to go about releasing this? Should I just be a selfish person and be like, look at me, I'm the most important person in ufology, I have these videos? He didn't do that. He actually went to the SCU, which is a scientific group. He, you know, introduced himself to people there and got them acquainted with the videos and let them do scientific analysis of those, and then eventually brought them out through his social media. And what happened? He got brutally attacked by, you know, Mick West, John Greenwald, like, you name it, anybody who's a name in on either side of the argument. And we do need people like Mick West and John Greenwald to be skeptical of the phenomenon when it comes about, when new information comes about. But, you know, when it tends to sort of attack the credibility of the person and attack the individual themselves, it prevents more altruistic behavior from coming about in the future. And I think that's why Andy has this mentality of, like, every man for themselves, I have to look after myself, right? Because this guy got pretty well effed with, you know?
Dude, UIP Twitter is full, attracts some bad human beings.
UFO Twitter, yeah.
Yeah, UFO Twitter. You're right. I just tend to use UIP, but yeah, UFO Twitter especially is full of, I mean, not to, like, shit on mentally ill people, because I am a mentally ill person, but it also attracts people who have a sort of lack of stability and, like, self-control and sense of what's appropriate. So it's like, if you step into the sphere, I'm learning, you just have to understand that a bunch of really nasty people who are angry for reasons that they don't quite understand are going to come at you with, like, whatever bad thing they have to say about you. And you have to just know that they're living their own private hells, and they're trying to drag you in there with them so they won't feel so lonely. And you got to have some compassion for them, but you also can't let it get to you too bad. But with the, like, Mick West and John Greenwald of the world, I think the one helpful thing that they provide is that you know exactly the questions that Mick West is going to throw at you. You know exactly his shtick. Like, he has a clear framework that's identifiable. So it's almost like knowing, if I'm going to bring out a video, I have to be able to answer this set of questions about it for it to pass the sort of Mick West test, so that he doesn't at least say, like, this is obviously, you know, bunked. I can see the, you know, I can see where this has been edited in some way or whatever. But is your experience been that just you've been personally attacked, or that there's, like, real discussion about the quality and content of the videos or photographs themselves?
Is that a question for me?
Yeah.
No, I was attacked, I mean, in every way, shape, or form. I was doxxed. I had my address being posted online. I had multiple Reddit threads created about me. My job's address was posted.
Yeah, that's out of line. Yeah,
it was really bad. And one of the reasons why, like, I get, like, and before anything, I want to thank Darcy for saying what he said. I appreciate that. But one of the things that gets me mad about the debunkers, for example, like Mick West, if you don't want to believe in something, that's perfectly fine. You're entitled to your opinion. The problem is just like you mentioned with what you just said, is you have these individuals in the UAP community or UAP Twitter or UFO Twitter that aren't really there up there. You understand? So if you're going to come forward with your views on footage or something that is your belief that is not real, it should be approached differently instead of just throwing it out there in that way, because it's like you throwing a spark to dry leaves. You understand what I'm saying?
I see. So it's almost like Mick West, you think he's, like, kind of, maybe he's not the one who's, like, shitting on you, but he's maybe dog whistling a little bit by pointing you out and knowing that the pack of crazies is going to come.
Exactly. It's the same thing that John Greenwald did with me too, you know, UFO Joe and I forget the other ones, but they all did it. You understand? And the problem is like, we're all in the exact same subject, trying to get to the exact same conclusion. Yet here's the big names, the ones who actually have some real influence, quote unquote, doing these kind of things. It's like, isn't that kind of counterproductive? You know, like what are you doing?
There's egos in this, and you guys know the names that I mean, but there's Every time there's a new news report, it's one or two certain individuals that...
Which two?
They're the what experts. I don't know. I don't want to name names. Darcy, back in this movie. So obviously you're trying to put this movie together. And if anybody's seen Darcy's movies in the past, it's... you know, tons of stuff from NASA to, you know, the unexplained of the phenomenon of ufologies, a plethora of movies. But this is the first time that you've done one, which is basically about the buggers underneath the water. And you got Rear Admiral Tim Gallaudet to come on record and to talk about this. And one feature in your film, they show between Catalina Island and I think it's San Jose or whatever. It looks almost like a base at the bottom of the ocean. Talk a little bit about that, like how you got in contact with Tim and like what you discovered as you're talking to this high level official.
Yeah. Well, I'll answer that question, but I'll also just come off of what you guys were just talking about in terms of like different personalities and egos and stuff. I think what happens in this community is people tend to, just in reality in general and in our group psychology of people, sociology, is that we tend to mingle with other people that we think like, and sometimes that's to a fault and sometimes it's a positive, you know, it helps you. I think people that are really influential, that you could call them UFO influencers, they watch each other and they form their opinion of each other over a longer period of time. And so like Andy, I think, is somebody to watch, and over a long period of time, he will prove himself to be like a good person. People can rely on this guy's testimony. And the other higher up guys too, you know, like I've had some people extend information to me and help me out so I could make, you know, provide better information in my documentaries. And so, you know, one of those, UFO Joe has been a nice guy to me sometimes, you know, so it's just like it, what goes around comes around. Some people end up, you know, first looking at you like, who is this dude? And then they end up being like, okay, you're cool. It just takes time.
You got to prove yourself almost, though.
You got to prove yourself. Yeah. And like the way I got involved with Tim Gallaudet, former Navy Admiral, who was chief oceanographer for the Navy for 7 years. He worked at NOAA, the National
Oceanic Atmospheric Administration.
You got it, brother. You know, he's very well informed. He's a very intelligent person. And when I started seeing him talking about UAP and USO phenomenon, I thought, I gotta somehow reach out to this man and find out what he knows more of, you know? And I think what happened was Matt Ford, who's a great guy, he's got the what's his show called again?
The Good Trouble Show.
The Good Trouble Show, Brig. So, you know, I saw his interview with Tim, and I thought, I'm just going to reach out on a lark and see if he's cool. And he was. And he was like, you know what, I can provide you his email and you can go from there. And I ended up emailing former Rear Admiral Tim Gallaudet, and he ended up writing me back. I wrote a long letter just explaining, you know, my intentions on my next project and how I think he would be incredibly important testimony to sort of like bringing about the best thesis that I'm going to present. And he was cool. And so I flew out to Washington, D.C. From the, you know, high, cold and wet north of Canada here. And he sat down with me and we had a good lengthy interview. And, you know, one of the things I really enjoyed about him, it's one thing to make a documentary about USOs and UAPs and kind of like create your narrative explaining that. But what was really important to me about his testimony is really explaining the ocean itself you know, how he describes the different water table sections going down to the abyss, the bottom of the ocean, right? And like, you know, illustrating that and then talking about the different technologies that we have, man-made technologies that are circumnavigating the ocean with, you know, different types of abilities of monitoring, listening, and providing observation for our intelligence, our Navy, our militaries, as well as just our scientific communities. And, you know, the fact that he's so well informed in all that makes you understand that this is not somebody that's just super gullible, that's jumping onto the UAP or UFO USO subject and just trying to look for, you know, his own way to become this important and popular and rich and famous person. You know, he's actually just seeing the phenomenon, which he did originally, and he's convinced, well, he saw the Go Fast, right, UFO video, and he saw it well before it was leaked to the public through Christopher Mellon and Lou Elizondo to the Stars Academy. And so he saw it years before it was circulated in an email thread, which was a classified email with only certain Navy members on that thread. And then essentially that video was confiscated from them. It got wiped from their email server, I guess. And that piqued his interest, and he started looking into this and talking to other Navy members. I have some testimony that I didn't include in the documentary where he spoke to NASA, people that work at NASA that have seen UAP and are very curious about it too. So it's just like, I think he's one of these important people that are going to inform the public in a very scientific and well-studied way so that we have more and better quality information as the years go forward.
Just to tag on to that, I know Tim, and you're absolutely right about his like credibility and sort of bona fides. Like he's not just a political appointee or something. I mean, he has a PhD in oceanography. He was the head of NOAA, which had he managed a $6 billion budget, and he had 20,000 people under him. Like, he is a well-established
expert. He's not an idiot. Yeah, by far.
No, so there's no alternate. Becoming UFO famous is just not, like, on the radar of shit that he would care about. He's a deadly serious person about the things that he cares about. He's brilliant.
And it counts as a whistleblower, if you think about it, because it goes to show you that these career men, people that are in the military for that long, it's eventually they see something or they hear something. So it's not, you know, and as we've interviewed many people from the DOD and military and Air Force, and are all encountering this or having entities show up in their homes, or even we were talking to Matthew Roberts, I think was his name.
Matthew Roberts off the Theodore Roosevelt. Yeah, he was in
was obsessed with the movies and those videos, kept watching it, became obsessed, and then manifested them in his room, which you're like, okay, that's a new dimension to this phenomenon that I wasn't expecting. Yeah, his whole life
becomes like a David Lynch film after that. It's just like, and he comes out in this totally different place where he's like, they dragged me through hell, and now I know that my life is not my own, and that all humanity is connected, and that I am here to do good in the world. Like, it becomes a spiritual transcendence thing for him. It's not like nuts and bolts, how do these Teslas in the sky work or whatever. Like, it totally transcends. It's fascinating where people go with this subject.
And everybody and everybody that you guys have encountered as well from the military, like, you could tell it personally affected them, that it changed their life in a fundamental way, which so very little in life will do that. You know, maybe the birth of my child is the first time that I saw the world differently. I realized that everybody's somebody's child. But that was like the few and far in between. You don't have other stuff. Having a close encounter as a kid, that was the biggest eye opener for me. I'm like, holy shit. this world is full of crap. These buggers are real. And it coming around to that, and even, you know, we're looking at the fact that they're underneath the water. Even we were looking at the Calvin Parker case. Once they were taken, it dived back inside the water. I investigated a case in Hope, BC when I was with MUFON, and it was a pickup size white tic-tac looking thing underneath the Fraser River, Darcy. And it was in Hope near the bear caves, and a kid must have had a horseshoe up his butt to captured this, but on his phone, whenever he takes a picture, it takes a 2.5 second video before that. And he captured this thing coming out of the Fraser River at a 45 degree angle. We calculated the speed at 3.2 Mach, never broke the surface. And the size of it was the size of a Ford pickup truck right out of the Fraser River at that angle. Wow. And you're like, it never broke the surface. No white water, no nothing, just from underneath. This is the part that even Darcy in your documentary, you know, it's not just going into a straight line. They turn underneath the water too, which would disintegrate whatever ship you have. I don't care how solid it is. You can't make those maneuvers underneath the water. And this is the part that's fascinating. I'm a kid at this subject. I'm giddy. Like, I think this is fantastic. It's like magic. And we need to have that sort of childlike wonder when it comes down to this phenomenon, because it is amazing. What I love about your documentaries, Darcy, is that, you know, the people that you interview, the intel that you have, but also your humble approach to it, right? Like, there's no ego. Even talking with Andy today, I can't sense an ego. And it's about, you know, telling people, like, pay attention. And you're right. It's not all CGI. I've seen, there was like a Netflix show. You guys might've seen it. It's all CGI. The entire thing is about extraterrestrial. They keep showing the same clips over and over again in every episode. And I'm like, that's not good documentary film. You could tell they just put that out because they wanted to beat, you know, Amazon or something. But good documentary films are hard to find. And especially about USOs, like, you have nothing on there. I know you interviewed Richard Dolan, Jim Goodall, Mark D'Antonio on there. They got amazing stories that you got from them about what they witnessed, what they went through. But I was going to ask you just my final question, Darcy. A couple of years ago, there was rumor that a submarine had hit something very large, very fast, and over 14 of the crew members had gotten injured on that. But it dropped, and I never heard anything else from it. But it was in the middle of the Atlantic. They hit something massive, which their radar never picked up. It damaged the front of the submarine somehow. And then the story just stopped. Do you guys know? Yeah. Did you hear anything about that, Andy?
I didn't hear anything else, but I know I've heard the story before.
Yeah. I'm like, why did it disappear? Yeah, I've heard the story
too. Do you know what ship that was? Like, was it the SN... 775 or something like that? Do you have anything?
I wouldn't know the number myself, but I know when he said 14 people, that's a substantial amount of people to be injured. You know, it's not, they probably broken.
Yeah, bones, a lot of whatever, see, right? see how that comes up, like hit underwater mountain, like that is pretty typical. Some of them have screwed up, and Jim Goodall discusses one of those cases.
I think it's the USS Connecticut in 2021.
Okay, and then I think there's actually that one YouTube link there, Crux. It says U.S. nuclear submarine hits unidentified object. Yeah. No. So, like, it's just, there's all kinds of stuff happening like this in the oceans that, you know, I'd love to document further. You know, one person that like Jim even discusses another person that was on a submarine that detected a fast mover or a USO when they were riding for one of their whatever amount of times on a submarine. And just by releasing the trailer where I have that excerpt, that little piece of testimony, the person who's being discussed of observing that reached out to me and was like, hey, that's my story. I saw the trailer and I'd love to tell you more about it. And I'm like, awesome. I'm going to interview you. So it's like, just the fact that you brought up this case and, you know, my trailer came out and other people are starting to see it. I would love more and more people to come to me from different backgrounds that have witnessed USOs in different ways. Because I think I'm just going to continue to make documentaries about ocean-based phenomenon going forward. But yeah, like it's cool that you found a story like that. And even in this documentary, Chris Sharp, who runs Liberation Times, he wrote an article. Apparently he was interviewing a whistleblower who had information about further information about the Tic Tac incident. And supposedly for days, you know, they were reporting these Tic Tacs in the ocean, flying off the coast there. And they supposedly picked up radar and underwater detections of a massive object that was in the ocean that these Tic Tacs were emanating from. So I find, like, you know, we're going to get more and more information about this. And it's like, if you think about it, UAPs or UFOs, if they want to go more undetected, where better than the ocean, which we don't have the best optics of from the land all the time. Only the military, like the Navy, has that kind of optics. And then the sky, clouds, right? Cloud cover is like a perfect place to hide it. And that is something we've had reports on for decades and decades, maybe even like centuries. People have said they've seen these strange objects move in and out of the clouds, right? Cloud cover is a perfect like way to conceal yourself, and the oceans is a great way too. So,
and the ocean, like you mentioned on your documentary, only 5% of the ocean has ever been documented. We don't
know the ocean floor. If we actually consider the mass of it, it's way less than a percent. I mean, like. Yeah,
well, we know more about the surface of the moon and Mars than we do about our own oceans, which to me is pathetic. Like, we should have started there and then work our way out, but we don't do things in order. Occultjourneys.com is the website that you want to visit. Darcy, when's the movie coming out? When's it being released?
Tuesday this week. Should be available on Amazon, iTunes, like Apple TV, Vimeo internationally, and a bunch of other streaming platforms like, I think, Voodoo.
Right. And is there anywhere that, besides the Occult Journeys, where can people follow you, Darcy?
Yeah, I just go by Darcy Weir Films on Instagram and Occult Journeys on Twitter. Those are pretty much, and Facebook, I'm just Darcy Weir. But nice. Yeah, people can reach out to me if they have information regarding UAPs or USOs from a military perspective. I'm always interested in that.
Nice. And Andy, where can people find you? And do you have anything you want to promote?
I don't promote myself like that, but if you want to follow me, I have an Instagram account, NYUAP discussion, and same for my YouTube channel, which is, I only have the VHS videos that I left up there. Other than that, I don't have anything else, but that's really it.
And then
I
help.
What was that?
I said, you're the most handsome man on the whole movie, so you should promote that, right?
I just want to say this real quick. I know we all focus on the USOs and the objects moving around, but when you get a chance, research the footprints that were found the article was released August 25th, 2018, of the footprints that were discovered 2.5 miles down on the ocean floor that were tracked for miles of what could only be described as a mechanical, massive object that almost looked like it was walking across the ocean floor.
So it's biped?
And they actually, they actually have photos and tracked the photos where they were able to map it for miles. So
how
there's
cool
more
is
than
that,
just,
though? I know it's scary, but how cool is that? I'm giddy about this stuff. Guys, I thank you so much, gentlemen, for joining me.
Yeah,
all three of you. It's amazing. We went further out than we thought we would, but we got to cover a lot of stuff. And for me, I'm fascinated by this subject, and I want to hear more. I'm looking forward to Richard's book as well. I thank you guys so much for this. Darcy, I know you're close to me, but I think we're going to hang out when I'm down at the Contact in the Desert. You're doing a speech show. I'm going to come and see
buddy.
You, man. Yeah.
If anybody's looking for a cool conference to go to this year, come to Contact in the Desert. Some great speakers are going to be there, and definitely look up Jason's, you know, GoFundMe. I've contributed to it,
yeah, which is awesome. Yeah.
Let's get this guy to Contact. Maybe it's he'll about be time, conducting. Right? Yeah, maybe he'll be doing some boots on the ground interviews there. So that'd be cool.
I think so. And the main thing is for me to just get to meet all the people that I get to talk about. Like, even Michael, like, we're really good friends, and I never got to hang out with him and have a beer in person. So this, for me happen. To get stateside, it's a big thing. So yeah, absolutely. And Darcy, thank you so much for donating. Guys, thank you so much for following us and listening to this episode. Please go see the movie. It's called Transmedium, Fast Movers and USOs 5.1. And like Darcy said, it's available everywhere. Probably Amazon's your best bet to get it right away, but it's everywhere. Really great movie. Well worth your time and very educational. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one. Are you paying attention?